Welcome to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Trevor Oldham. Trevor is the founder of Podcasting You, as well as a limited partner in some investment deals. And so he came on the show today, joining us to talk about his limited partnership investments, one of them being in self storage and how that compares with some other investments that he's made. Well, Trevor, excited to have you on the podcast with me today. If you don't mind, maybe we'll just start out if you can give our listeners a little bit of a background on how you got into business, maybe a little bit of your business background, as well as how you kind of got started with investments.
Yeah, it sounds perfect. And thank you, Ben, for having me on the show today. And I guess one, starting to look at how I started the business was back in 2015, I was running my own podcast. I was running a different company at the time. And with that podcast, I was booking guests. I was editing the show, doing show notes, basically everything that goes into a podcast, I was doing it. I was still back in college, not like a full-time gig or anything like that. I was just freelancing. And I kept coming across these individuals that wanted to get booked on podcasts. And whether these were real estate investors, whether it was business coaches, business professionals, entrepreneurs, politicians, lawyers, basically anyone that wanted to get booked on a podcast, it's like, hey, why don't I do that? And I quickly realized that my time is better spent getting someone booked on a podcast because it was more of like a commission where I might bill someone $50 an hour to edit their podcast and it actually takes a full hour to edit their podcast where I can say, hey, I'll get you booked on a podcast. You know, pay me $250 for every podcast I book you on. You know, it might take me 10 minutes, it might take me an hour, but whatever the time frame may be, it made sense to go in that direction. So 2017, just continue to pick up like those freelance clients. And then after about a year doing that, I was like, you know, maybe I should bring on like an employee or like a contractor, someone just to help me out to grow the company. Did that. And I was like, you know, year two, maybe I should get a website. You know, I had enough business coming in, just freelancing, build out a website. And then about, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, made the switch to go into pretty much all in on helping alternative investment companies. So really anyone outside your typical, I say like stock market. So obviously the real estate space, there's a ton of niches. So if you're thinking like your self-storage investors, mobile home park, multifamily, then even going as like cost segregation specialists, whole life insurance folks. And then, so that's been cool. And then we started working with like these other different niches, which has been pretty cool. Like there's this one company where you can invest in barrels of whiskey, which I never thought was possible. But I mean, the investment I believe is 100K. So it's not like it's a crowdfunding source. You know, I guess you really got to know about your whiskey, but long story short, so I've been doing that. And a lot of my clients, they were just very wealthy. You know, they're coming in paying our services. And I thought to myself, why don't I start investing in real estate? I was like, you know, I'm a pretty introverted person. I don't know if I could deal with tenants and different things like that. So, you know, kind of put that on the back burner. And then I started listening to more real estate podcasts, started learning about the passive side of real estate investing. And I was like, wow, I can invest in a deal as a limited partner and I don't have to deal with like the tenants or anything like that. Yeah, maybe I might not make as good of a return as it would be if I was, say, on the GP side, if I was just doing the deal myself. But then, yeah, that really got me started on the passive investing side, just interviewed tons of different operators, sponsors, and really just jumped in, you know, made that first investment. The first investment was in a mortgage note fund. It was super small. It was a $500 investment.
Okay.
It was nice and small. I get like $3 a month in distributions on that. So you know,
nice.
You got to start somewhere though.
I mean, yeah,
exactly. So just started there and then eventually, you know, found a couple other deals and put 25K each into those deals. And that's been good. I'm actually going to put 25K into that mortgage note fund probably by the end of this month. I have the money just sitting in a high yield savings account, you know, Might as well just let it ride a couple more days. But, you know, I like that from just the cash flow play. But yeah, that's, you know, really how I got started into real estate investing. And obviously there's more I could go into on that, but just to give you a high level overview, that's sort of what it looked like.
Okay. So as far as when you were booking or when you were looking to bring on clients and finding investments for them, what was that role like as far as, you know, you said you were kind of looking at all different asset types and working with all different types of clients. Was there any like niche that you were looking for right off the bat or did that kind of form over time or not really?
Yeah, I think it sort of just formed over time. You know, one within my business, I was really looking to work with anyone, pretty much anyone in the alternative investment space. And then when it came to my personal investments, one, I wanted just cash flow right away, which is why I got into that mortgage in a fund. Then I went into a triple net lease deal where I liked it. And that is corporate grade A tenants, very safe. Like the tenants are going to be like Dollar General, AutoZone,
right?
You know, very good tenants, you know, getting that monthly distribution, and it's not going to knock it out of the park. I mean, the returns are 7 to 10% annually paid monthly. Right now, I think I'm on average about 7% a month. The triple net or the mortgage fund, I'm going to get about 9%, you know, annually. But then I wanted to be more aggressive. And that's where I came across a self-storage opportunity, where it was more of a self-storage deal. And the person that I invested with, she had been a client of ours. And that's not just the reason I invested with her. I really wanted to invest in the self-storage space. And I was just talking to different folks. And for me, I'm a non-accredited investor. So, you know, I'm looking at everything that's 506B. Obviously can't get into anything that's accredited. And this individual, she had a 506B deal open, kept talking to folks. Her name kept coming up again and again and again. It's like, well, I know she was my client, but let me have that conversation with her about investing in her deal. She had a deal coming up, and it was basically the self-storage facility. There's a couple, it's almost like a fund model. So there's three different properties within it, but the owner operator hadn't raised the unit rates or rents in about 10 years. And then there's a bunch of untouched land on the property as well, where you could develop it, whether that was developing to store like RVs and boats, or whether that was just to store or just to build out more units. And it just made sense to me. I'm like, well, just from the standpoint, they haven't raised any prices in 10 years.
Right.
Plus this development opportunity. And obviously that's more of a long-term play, because right now with that deal, I haven't received any distributions. I invested in it last February, so we're going over a year ago now. And then I'll probably receive that first distribution January of 25. So it's obviously a very long time with no distributions, but should get that return of capital by January 26, plus the distributions from there. So it's interesting, these two different scenarios. I don't know which one I like, whether I like the cash flow coming in right away, or like the self-storage deal where it's more that appreciation, that long-term play.
Right. And I mean, that's really important for anybody that's looking as far as to get into investments as well. If you're going to become a limited partner on a storage deal, that's going to take 2 years before you see any returns, versus something that does at least start bringing in some cash, you know, month three or whatever that would be. That's a big difference, especially, you know, depending on how tight you are for cash and what you're looking for from your investments. It's definitely something to keep in mind there. So especially with it seeming like you found a really good value add property without even really looking for it, you just kind of came across that, or had you already started to kind of think like, oh, I want to invest in storage, and then you found this property, or how did that kind of unfold?
Yeah, I think I just wanted to get into self-storage. It just made sense to me. I think part of the reason is when me and my wife, we bought a house, and for the, basically to give you some context, so July or June, our apartment lease came up and we bought a house like at the end of June, and then we couldn't move into our house until like September 1st. So there's about 2 months there. We had just gotten married. We got all the wedding gifts. We're not going to store it at our in-laws, because that's who we ended up staying with for about 45, 60 days there. And we just stored it in a storage unit. And I think it was so easy. I never even like talked to anyone. I just went online, you know, got my unit, went in, put my stuff in the unit. And then eventually, once we moved out and bought our house, we took everything out of the unit. I was like, that was very simple. That just seems to make more sense to me, and a lot less headache than when it comes to like multifamily and then the different things that come up with that. So that piqued my interest into self-storage. And I had actually talked to this individual in September 22 before I invested in February 23. And they had this deal, you know, going on. And I think the minimum was 50K to get into the deal. And I said, hey, can I get into the deal for 25K, you know, as a first-time investor? She said, no, because I think she had a lot, they expected a lot of subscriptions coming through and people investing in the deal. And then I think the deal was closing in February. And I reached out to her and said, hey, I saw the deal's closing. Can I just put 25K into the deal? And then she accepted it at that time. Okay. So I stayed on it and I kept getting like updates on it. I was like, I really want to get into this deal, but I don't necessarily want to put at this point in time, put 50K more into any, or 25K more into any single sponsor, as I'm just sort of continuing to learn the ropes. Cause I made that first two investments of October of 23. And then now it's February or October 22, now February 23. So it's only been a few short months. So I don't want to put all my eggs into the basket with one specific sponsor. I kind of wanted to spread it around, but yeah, that's sort of what it looked like. And I loved just the concept of self-storage. I mean, it was so simple. You know, I think I paid maybe $100 a unit. You know, we had to get up two different units. I'm like, I never even talked to this individual that just went online, booked the unit, paid, you know, they had the auto recurring subscription, whatever, And then it was so simple. I was like, well, this is pretty nice. How can I invest in something like this?
Yeah, and it's definitely self-storage has definitely come a long ways over the last few years with technology and stuff rolling into it. I mean, they've made everything pretty automated. You can have a pretty good experience with it. It is kind of interesting too that if you only rented it for like 2 months and then you actually moved out and, ended your lease and stuff, that's usually where they get you is that, oh, everybody thinks they're going to need a unit for 2 months and then they keep it for 2 years, So but no, that's awesome. So as far as, like diversifying your investments a little bit, just to kind of see what you like the most, it's kind of been your strategy. It seems like putting a little bit of money in a couple of different asset classes within real estate, right? And then seeing what cash flow is the best, seeing what has the best returns. Is that kind of the model that you're going to try to keep building on going forward?
Yeah, it's pretty spot on. So I grew up and I did an internship at Fidelity, and I was all about investing in the stock market. I remember reading I think it was J.L. Collins' Simple Path to Wealth book, putting money into a low cost index fund, maxing out 401k, maxing out IRA. And that felt good, but I was like, I don't know if I want to, have to wait so long to touch my money. I mean, I like running my business and everything, but I don't know if I want to be doing it another 10, 15, 20 years from now. And that sort of took me down that passive path. And that was part of the story there as well. So right now, as of this year, instead of me going through and just like maxing out like a 401k, now I'm taking that money and going all in into real estate this year. So I've sort of switched my strategy. And I said, hey, I'm gonna try it out for 1 year. Instead of me putting money into these low cost index funds, let me take that money and then put it into real estate with the goal of getting into one or two, maybe three deals this year. And that's sort of how my portfolio is right now. It's probably split probably 65% in the stock market, and just it's literally one single index fund that I invest in. It's the Fidelity Total Stock Market Index Fund. Just make it simple for myself. And then the other 35% is in real estate. But I mean, my goal at the end of the day is to build up the cash flow from these investment properties, where I'd almost be like, hey, if I want to keep running this company, I can. But if I don't want to, maybe I could sell it off. Maybe I could cut back on the amount of clients that we work with and just have that monthly cash flow coming in, cover my expenses. And when I was running the numbers, I think the goal would be within 7 years when I was running all those numbers. And this is projecting, based on some of the projections that I've got on at least two of the real estate deals that I'm in, where that mortgage note fund, you're not getting like, there's not sort of like an equity multiple behind it. It's you put your money in and you get your monthly distribution. But then it included like the self-storage deal. The goal, based on the writing and based on everything I'm seeing, 2x equity multiple within 5 years, where the triple net lease deal, that's 2x equity multiple within 7 years. So you factor in those numbers and you start to run it a little bit more. But obviously at this time, I'm 26, so I don't, or I guess I just turned 27 last week now that I talk about it. But with that said, I have a lot of time, so I don't really mind going into that self-storage development deal where I know, hey, within 5 years, that's still on my time frame. Maybe as I get a little closer to that 5, 6, 7 year mark, I do more of a triple net lease deal where it's, more pure cash flow play, not as much, not to say that the self-storage deal is speculation, but there's obviously more risk to it just being a development deal. But that's sort of what I'm looking at right now. And I think I just want to continue just to put this money into real estate. And obviously the deal has to make sense. And for those listening, I'm not going to just blindly like invest with anyone just to invest. I say it's passive investing, but you also got to vet the sponsor. There's a whole lot to it. That's a very active part of it, because there's been, there are sponsors where, hey, if you're putting, 25K, 50K, 100K into a deal, that's a sizable chunk of money. And then you're almost married to that person for however long the deal is, whether that is, 5 years, 3 years, 7 years. You got to make sure you really trust that person when you're putting your money there with them.
So as far as vetting your sponsors or finding the sponsor that you're looking for, how do you go about that? Or what are some questions that you ask when you're going into those conversations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one, it's been super helpful. So I'm part of the Left Field Investor Community, which is, short for LFI, and that community has been phenomenal. And it's a group of all folks that are basically passive investors like myself, not so much active investors. So that community is very good, because if I come across a sponsor who I think, hey, I might want to invest with this individual, I can basically put their name in as the form as part of LFI, and people say, hey, I invested with this company, here's my experience, or no, no, I haven't invested with them. But I find that super helpful. But early on, before I even joined that community, I think I was just using like BiggerPockets. I was using like LinkedIn, and I would just type in multifamily syndicators, self-storage syndicators, mobile home park syndicators. And then see folks that come up, and then they're always happy to talk to you because, I mean, they want your money at the end of the day to, to get into these deals. So they're more than happy to have a conversation with you. So once I'm on the call, I just want to, one, I guess let's take a step back. I had to do my own underwriting on these deals to understand what made sense, because I found that a lot of these sponsors that I would talk to, they would say, yes, this deal is underwritten conservatively. And that was the common theme, conservatively. Like, well, what is conservative mean? So
right.
I had to go through and you know, and figure out my own underwriting. And I think there's just YouTube videos that you could watch, you know, to help you out with that in the different asset classes. So I got that down where when I'm on a call, when someone's going to send me over their numbers, I can make sure it's actually underwritten conservatively. I'd say, hey, how much money are you investing in the deal? What's your skin in the game? And trying to make sure it's more than, say, your acquisition management fee or acquisition fee. So that way, you know, if they're making 100K on the acquisition fee, that they're not just putting 100K in, want to make sure that they have some skin in the game.
Right.
Ask them, like, how their communication style is, you know, or is it monthly reporting? Is it quarterly reporting? Can I speak to past investors? I run a background check on them. That's something that's been interesting to me.
Okay.
You know, that's if I'm really interested. Hey, I really want to invest in this deal. And that's been interesting to me, running these background checks. And I forget which software I use, but it was like $30 a month. And then I just ran the background checks and then I just cancel it at that point. But things I'm looking for are, like, one guy I came across, he had a bunch of like tax liens on his properties, you know, for unpaid taxes. That tells me, hey, if you can't pay your taxes, I don't want to invest in your deal. Then you might get the guy that, you know, he ran one or two red lights over the course of 10 years. That's you know, I'm not going to worry about that. But, you know, always doing that background check. And I find that it's interesting that if you say, hey, I'm going to run this background check on you, is there anything that I should know of before I do it? And some folks will be, hey, you know, I went through a divorce. You might see that on the background check. You might see, you know, X, Y, and Z. Anyway, and then you come across the guy that says, oh, yeah, you're not going to find anything. And then he filed for bankruptcy like 15 years ago. You know, that's a pretty big, that's a pretty big event that I think that you would just forget to mention. So that's a big aspect of it, too. And then for the communication style, after I hop off a call, I'll send them an email and just ask them a question about their deal. And I just want to see how quickly that they can get back to me. And for me, you know, can you get back to me within 3 to 5 business days? I'm not looking for you to get back to me like next hour. But I mean, there's folks I reach out to with question, they get back to me 3 weeks. I send them another question, it's another 3 weeks. And I'm like,
that's frustrating.
It's definitely frustrating. I'm like, I haven't even invested any money with you. What's it going to be like once you have my money? How's the communication style going to be at that time? And you sort of kind of, you definitely got to be guarded on these calls, because I think a lot of these sponsors all sound great. But, you know, after a while, the more calls you get on, the more deals you look at, the easier it becomes. And then you see, like, you know, sponsors saying, hey, you're going to get a 40% IRR, you know, just different things. You're like, well, that'd be nice, but I don't know. That doesn't really too much. That kind of scares me a little bit. You know, I'm just looking for your standard 12 to 15% IRR, maybe in 8 to 10% annual, and just try to play it conservatively. Not to say you can't get a 40% IRR or, you know, higher annual distributions and different things like that. But I'd rather someone say, hey, you're going to get 8 to 10% annually. And the next thing I know, I'm getting 12% annually, or 15% IRR, and I get 17 to 20%. You know, I'd rather someone do like that than sort of overpromise on me.
Yeah, it's nice to underpromise and then overdeliver,
yeah,
versus overpromise and then end up in hot water.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah, but that's awesome and great insight too, as far as even with the background check, just little things like that that people probably don't think about going into investing if you haven't done it yet. And so, yeah, that's really good perspective too, as far as vetting the people that you're going to invest money with, to see, make sure they're legit, make sure they're honest and straightforward and you want to work with them. So let me ask you this on some of those limited partnership deals. Like what is your exit strategy look like? What are you normally shooting for in terms of, you know, your first option to get out?
Yeah. So for me, when I'm looking at these deals, I want to see, one, how quickly can I get my return of principal? So ideally looking to get it within 1 to 3 years. And then once I get that return of principal back, then obviously I can take that money, say in the self-storage deal, I put 25K in. The goal, you know, when I was talking earlier, is it looks like invested in 23, should get it back in 26. So then that's 3 years. And then plus I'm getting that distribution, you know, for however, how long they own the properties until they sell them. So that's really ideally what I'm looking at a deal, is how quickly can I get my return of principal back? And obviously it's going to be a little bit trickier to get it within like 6 months, a year, depending on if it's just, say it's a fix and flip deal. You know, yeah, you can probably get your return on principal plus the your interest on that rather quickly. That's really what I'm looking for on these deals, is how quickly can I get my return of principal back? Because then I know, hey, if I could get this back quickly, and again, within like about a year to 3 years, then I can invest that money in another deal. And then if that deal ends up not working out and I make 0% on my money, at least I didn't lose any money on the deal. And not that every deal is going to hit a home run. I wish it was. I mean, so far the deals I've invested in, they seem to be doing well. You know, I haven't invested in, and it's unfortunate, but you hear investors invest in like Ponzi schemes. I was talking to an investor the other day where he invested in these turnkey properties. And for those of you who might not understand, or might not know what a turnkey property is, it's basically you can buy properties in, say, like your Midwest or like Indiana, Ohio, different spots like that. You can buy properties for like 50K, you know, super cheap, 100K. And you have a property management team through almost like this investment company, and they make the property look nice. Long story short, they would take photos of the property with appliances in it. Then the company would take the appliances out, and then just wow. bad things like that, where he said, hey, I spent 20K on this rehab through this turnkey company, and all I got you was a paint job. You know, and you lose your money like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just being wary of, you know, some of these different sponsors that are out there and vetting them. And, you know, this particular individual, you know, you feel bad because you hear people that invested all their money into these certain deals. And for me, I never want to invest more than 20% or even more conservative, like 10 to 15% of my cash into any one sponsor. I mean, I would invest again in a sponsor like the Triple Net Lease folks. They've been great. Communication's been great. Everything's been smooth. I would invest with them again. And, you know, these other sponsors I would probably invest in again too, but I never want to say, hey, I have 100K. That's all I have to invest in real estate. Let me put that 100K into one specific deal, because I just think there's a lot of risk with it. But not to get too long off, you know, off story, but going back to your question about the exit strategy. But yeah, really for me, it's just looking at the return of principal and then looking at that equity multiple. Because for me, I know, hey, if I put this money in the stock market, historically going to double my money about every 7 years. Obviously, it's not as linear as you're going to be in the real estate. You know, some years you can make 30% of your money. Some years you could lose 20% in your money. So it's definitely not as linear as it would be in real estate. But I know with the real estate deals, hey, I'm just trying to 2X my money 5 to 7 years, just something that I can outperform the market on, and then get that return of principal back early on in the deal, where, yeah, it would be nice to get that, you know, once they sell the properties, get that additional income. But as long as my money's back in my hands, I'm happy at that point. Anything extra is almost gravy on top of that.
Right. So when you were going into your self storage deal that you were LP on, was there any negotiation as far as like quarterly distributions versus annual distributions? How does that work for an investor coming into that? Do you get any say in how those distributions work, or do they pretty much just tell you, here's what the offer is that you can buy into?
Yeah, I think they just told me that it was pretty much, that was the offer I could buy into. Okay. And I think that's one, you know, being almost like the new kid on the block investing in it and coming in with that 25K into the deal. It wasn't like I was coming in as part of like a group or a family office where you're investing a couple million into the deal. And the way that they structured it out, and it made sense in my mind, and that I'm not worried about not getting those distributions right now, because they laid it out, the entire plan. Hey, we're going to buy these properties. We're going to develop these properties. Once we start renting out the developed properties, then you're going to get your distribution. So it was never like the deposit distribution. So it was all part of the plan the entire time. I knew going into the deal, it's going to be at least 2 years for me to get those distributions. Knowing what I know now, I maybe would have put that money into a different deal, and whether that's in self-storage, where I kind of like the cash flow coming in on a monthly basis, but now I'm, you know, married to the deal, I'm locked in, so now I want the deal to succeed the best that it can. So I think it's just a learning experience, but yeah, they had their terms. And then again, I think I was still fairly new at it. I've been talking to sponsors about probably 6 months beforehand, before I got into my first deal, and then maybe that was, you know, 4 or 5 months after it. So I didn't really know you could negotiate different terms and things like that. I wish I knew now. Or I wish I could have done that back then. But yeah, right now I just rolled with the terms that they offered.
Okay, awesome. And then so with your company, do you actually, like, if somebody would come to you saying, hey, I have X amount of money looking to invest, do you help them partner with sponsors then, or what role do you play in that?
Yeah, so primarily like what we do is we help folks let's take the self-storage company as an example. They want to go out there and they want to raise additional capital. We're going to try to place them on podcasts where your high net worth investors will be listening, your doctors, your lawyers, your dentist. So that way those folks can hear them and then they can invest with them. So we do it that way because like we can't guarantee anything because like I could go on a podcast and I could pick up investors, or Ben, you could go on that same podcast and not pick up investors. It just, you know, it's hit or miss depending on, you know, what does the client have set up on the back end? Do they have a landing page, automation funnel? You know, there's so many variables that go into it, but we want to set up our clients the best for success. And again, that's really just placing them on these highly targeted shows, you know, making sure they're going on shows that make sense for them and sort of like a PR, a form of PR. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting because I never majored in PR. I never thought about starting a PR company. I was just like, hey, I'm making money at this company. You know, it was my third different company that I started. Why don't I just keep rolling with it? And then, you know, obviously haven't stopped since then. But yeah, that's sort of what we do in a nutshell. And why someone works with us is just to get more exposure on their company than say like your traditional media, whether that's getting featured on blogs or television. You know, it's just getting, you know, more eyeballs for our clients.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, I wasn't 100% sure yet how the whole podcasting you worked or the model behind that. And we didn't really have much of a chance to talk about that. If you have another minute here, I'd like to kind of pick your brain on it a little bit. How much as far as with the podcasting side, you know, how much you said you brought on an employee shortly after you had got it started. It was just you that started that company. As far as reaching out to podcasts, I guess I'm assuming you put together like a one page for the company to send to these podcasts to see if there's any interest in having them on the show, or how do you go about starting to market to get somebody onto a podcast?
Yeah, it's perfect. So definitely want to have like what you mentioned, like a one sheet. So to preface it, it's like when our client comes on board, we haven't filled out a doc. So it'll be like, what do you want to talk about? Or like, what topics do you want to talk about? What questions do you want to answer? Include their bio, links to like their social media, website, past interviews, headshot, different things like that. So they fill out that form. And then our designer will take it, build out a one sheet for our client. And then, like you mentioned, that's pretty much what we'll send out to podcast hosts. With that said, we obviously have to send out some sort of pitch to the podcast hosts. And within that, it'll just go over like, you know, almost like a brief bio, brief topics that you can discuss, different things like that, where you don't want to receive like, a host doesn't want to receive like five paragraphs worth of information. It's going to be information overload, where you could put that more in your one pager, which is nice because then you can include it on there. And then, yeah, just making sure you're hitting the target audience. If you're a multifamily investor and you want to go on multifamily shows, then reach out to multifamily shows. Flip side, self-storage investor, reach out to self-storage shows. And there's different softwares that out there that you can use to look up these shows, but you don't want to be like a fix and flip guy trying to go on a multifamily podcast because you're probably not going to go on the show. So you just got to make sure, you know, you're not just reaching out to any real estate show. And something I made that was, you know, looking back, it's funny now, but not so much funny back then. But as I was starting to work with these real estate clients, I was just trying to put my clients on real estate shows, not so much realizing there was a difference between like real estate investing shows and real estate agent shows. And obviously there's a big difference between an investor and an agent. And then I just kept getting like yelled at by these real estate agents being like, hey, why are you pitching this individual to my show? You know, I'm an agent. We don't talk about investing at all. And I think that was like my first year or two in business. So it's been a while since then, but yeah, you just want to make sure you're reaching out to the shows that make the most sense.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And yeah, it's one of those things like you don't learn it unless you just, you know, you try it out and see what works. And you got to have some of that pushback so you can figure out where to go. So no, that's awesome. Hey, well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I really appreciate you joining us on the podcast today to talk about your investments and the different strategies that you have. If there's one thing that we could kind of maybe wrap up with would be like, is there one piece of advice that has really stuck out to you, something that's really helped you with your investments as you've grown a little bit and learned what you're doing that you'd like to share with somebody that's looking to get started with investments?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just making that jump. You know, for anyone that's listening that hasn't done any investing specifically in real estate, I found that once I got into that first mortgage note fund, got that first distribution, it's like, I kind of like this. How can I find more deals? But I was very nervous. And then especially, you know, $500 is different than wiring over 25K. And obviously that brought a sense of almost like anxiety wiring that money over because you're, you know, I want to make sure it goes where it needs to go. And you know, I'm not usually wiring money over that often, but, you know, got that done. But yeah, for me, it was just jumping in, you know, I was super nervous. Everyone in my family, everyone I know only invests in the stock market. So I'm the only one that invests in real estate. So I couldn't go to like talk to anyone, which was nice having that left field investor community. But I just made that leap and I was like, wow, I wish I had done this like 10 years earlier. So that's the biggest piece of advice would just be if you're on the fence about investing, just just dive in, just do it. You know, obviously it's going to be a little nervous, a little, you know, anxious the first time you do it, but then once you do it, you're like, wow, it really wasn't so bad after all.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, definitely appreciate your insight and your willingness to be on the podcast with me. If you don't mind, could you give us, if somebody was looking for the Left Field Investors community, how do we go about getting connected with them?
Yeah, most certainly. So that I believe that's just their website. I'm pretty sure it's just leftfieldinvestors.com. And then you can go on there. And I recommend, so they have like a community platform. I think it's like $200 a year, but trust me, it's well worth it. It's worth every penny. There's tons of forums talking about all different sponsors. And yeah, it's definitely worth every penny. I mean, that just expanded my knowledge so quickly than what I could have done on my own.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of great free information that's available out there. But if you're really serious about getting into investing, you want to invest a little bit in your knowledge base before you go into it. So, yeah, I mean, something like that you're going to pay a couple $100 for to gain knowledge from people that are legit doing it and know what they're talking about. It's invaluable, really. I mean, as far as, you know, that kind of a community. So, well, thank you very much for sharing with us today, Trevor. It was awesome to have you on the show. Super, super interesting conversation. I'd love to learn more. If somebody's looking for more information on Trevor or how to connect, you can go to Podcasting You, or in the show notes below, you can check out his LinkedIn profile and learn more about Trevor there and connecting with him, as well as Left Field Investors. The link will be below in the notes as well. And so if you want to check out that community, check out the show notes below. And yeah, thank you again for listening to the Self Storage Insight Podcast. We hope that this episode has helped you and helped inform you on your investment opportunities and maybe some things to look out for as you get started in self-storage investments. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a quick reminder, this episode was brought to you by CC Storage. CC Storage is a no-cost property management software that allows you to pass the fees for credit card processing on to your tenants, freeing up some CapEx space for your business and helping you more efficiently run your storage facility. If you'd like to learn more about CC Storage, click the link in the description below, and we hope to see you again for our next episode.